One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
When it comes to fungicides, there's only one way to spell yield, N-E-O. Miravis Neo is the 2024 number one retailer recommended corn fungicide for a reason. It dominates spots, rots, blights, and stress to out-yield competitive brands like Veltima, and there's 6 years of university data to prove it. Ask your Syngenta retailer about using Miravis Neo for more yield more often.
Based on 2024 Stratus Retailer Efficacy Study. Always read and follow label instructions.
Listen up, it's Nick and Sam. Taking you to jungle lands. Bengals pride, it fills the air. Every week we're always there. All the plays, Bengals roaring every way. Stories, news, and game recaps. Jungle Juice, we bridge those gaps. Welcome to the Jungle Juice. Nick and Sam, let's break it loose. Cincinnati, hear our call. Bengals fans, unite us all.
Welcome in to the latest edition of the Jungle Juice Podcast. I'm Sam Gormley. He's Mick Nelson. Mick, how's it going? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time since we've been on here. It's been 2 weeks. Had a nice refresher. I don't know. It's good to be back here.
This is the stretch of the year where both of our schedules, like we both have really busy periods, but then there are periods where they overlap. And this is a section where both of our busiest seasons overlap. And luckily mine is the roller coaster is starting to dip down. Like we're almost back to the station for the most part. And then it rides again in a couple of weeks, but still it's kind of nice to recharge a little bit, but it's also good to kind of get away from the workflow.
Yeah.
And talk about some other stuff.
And it sucks because this is our busiest time of the year with our regular jobs. And this is also like our favorite time of the year, I feel like, for our NFL fandom. Like we absolutely love free agency in the draft and in watching these rosters kind of take shape for 2025. So we're still paying attention. But yeah, it's been a busy time for sure.
And it'll be really interesting to see how this all goes along and so on, because the Bengals have some fascinating decisions. In case you hadn't heard, they got some contract questions, maybe. I don't know. Do they? Can they? I don't know. There's just so many questions that comes along, and we'll kind of touch on those, I guess, a little bit. But on the show today, we are going to update some of the news since we've been around. Bengals did make their first cut, and I think it stunned everybody. We'll talk about that. They have a new coach. Well, I mean, I don't know that there's really a whole lot to discuss. Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor talked at the combine. The NFLPA report card came out, and the Bengals report card looked, well, not great.
The same. About the same as it has the past 3 years.
We'll touch on that here as well. And then today's main topic on the show, though, is we're going to go all into the offense. Free agents, the guys that we can see, you know, who could the Bengals be looking at signing, whether it's skill guys, or where you're going to see more likely, at least in my opinion, is offensive line, and more specifically at offensive guard. So we're going to dive all the way into that on today's show. But we invite you to follow us on our social media channels. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're also on Twitter. We're also on your favorite podcasting platform. Make sure you follow us there and give us a 5-star rating that way. But first, I think it's important for us to at least hit a couple of the news headlines. Mick, I know you're just absolutely floored beyond belief that Sheldon Rankins is no longer a Cincinnati Bengal. And right now, I want you to give me your top 5 Sheldon Rankins moments as a Cincinnati Bengal. Can you give even one?
I think he had a couple sacks.
I think he had one sack. I think against the Browns, if my memory is right there. Probably one.
Which was the sack?
Which was the sack? I mean, it just was. Okay, so let's see here as I'm pulling this up. We probably could have done our job and figured this out. So yeah, the Sheldon Rankins experience, he had one sack. And okay, this doesn't even have tackles for a loss listed, but he only had 18 total tackles and 10 solo tackles playing in 7 games. I mean, it was a bust. I know were very hesitant, but I don't think you thought it would be this bad.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it would be this bad. You know, I still thought he'd be a very effective 3 technique defensive tackle for us. And sometimes when you sign guys, you deal with situations like this. I mean, I'm glad that it's only going to be a 1-year issue as opposed to when we signed Trey Waynes and we were stuck with them for 2 years. But yeah, I mean, it sucks that we didn't really get much out of them, especially for the money that we signed him for. But best of luck to him. I hope he's healthy. He's feeling a lot better ever since that illness that he got.
There were some more things that came out following that it does sound like it might have been viral meningitis, which is not great. Not that there's illnesses, but yeah, I hope his health is there. But at the same time, it's kind of one of those things that I'm sure for both sides, it's like, yeah, I think it's best that we go our separate ways. It didn't sound like it really worked at all. Bengals have a new defensive assistant, Sean Desai. Comes from the Rams. He was the defensive coordinator for the Bears and the Eagles. He was the Eagles defensive coordinator the season before this past one that got canned, and then they hired Vic Fangio, and Vic Fangio turned them completely around.
Yeah, if I remember, I think he got canned midway through the season.
What happened is, if my memory's right, he got demoted. Halfway through the season.
Because who'd they promote instead? I can't remember.
I don't even remember. Because they took away the defensive play calling from him about halfway through the season. And then
the team collapsed. So maybe this might be a good hire.
Yeah, I mean, it's a defense. It's a senior defensive assistant. Like, what really is he doing? Probably game plan. And so on. I'm sure it's just another mind in the room. And honestly, you can never have too many minds when you get into this. So I'm fine with it. Like, it just seems like it's another coach. Like, this is not a defensive coordinator or something. Alex asks, who's going to win Sunday Night Football tonight? Is there Sunday Night Football tonight? Are we up? Are we missed? Does the UFL begin today or whatever it is? Or what do they call it now? Is it the UFL now?
I think it's the UFL.
Does that begin tonight? Or is he talking about the Oscars? I have no idea.
The Oscars? Who's going to win the Oscars tonight? That's the real question. I have no damn... I hope it's Dune. I hope it's Dune 2.
You want me to be honest with you? Dope.
You don't know.
I don't think I could name you one movie that's up today.
The Bob Dylan movie is up there.
Timothée Chalamet, right? Isn't he? Okay. There you go. Yeah, that's
Bob Dylan.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. Conclave was good.
I haven't seen it. I'm not a movie guy, though. I'm just not. Okay, Combine. Last week, Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor talked at the Combine. I watched both. I'll be honest. I don't really know that I learned anything, because Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor both said exactly what you expected them to say. We like T. Higgins. We like Trey Hendrickson. We like Ja'Marr Chase. We want them on our football team. We're going to try to make them on our football team next year. And I love that people read so much into this, because it's not like Duke Tobin is going to get up there and be like, you know what, we really want to trade Trey Hendrickson. Like, we don't think he's very good. You know, like, we're worried that he's going to hit off the edge. Or, you know, T. Higgins, he gets hurt a lot, so we're probably not going to be looking at re-signing him. He's going to say everything that you want him to say. So I really didn't take anything from any of his comments really at all in throughout the combine whatsoever.
Yeah, and it's the same case every season that they talk at the combine. They're not going to really tip their hand or anything like that. They're not going to give us any juicy headlines, really, you know, when they're giving these interviews, which I prefer, just as a fan. But yeah, it's just not much really to say from it.
You asked me on whatever day that he talked, I think it was it Tuesday or Wednesday? I don't remember what day it was. You asked me, said, oh, did you listen to it? You know, what did you say? And I told you, you could have, you don't know what he said, but you could try and say, I would ask you the questions and you could have said the same thing that Duke Tobin was going to say. Yeah. Meaning that it was entirely predictable as to what it was. But I do like listening to those because you get so many media, because usually in the week to week, that's just Cincinnati media. National media doesn't typically come into those scenarios. But in this scenario, you had all of the national guys. And they kept asking about T. Higgins, but they would do it in different ways. And finally, Duke Tobin got to the point where he's like, guys, I don't know how else to answer this question. Like, we want T. Higgins on our team. We're going to try and get T. Higgins on our team, and we hope T. Higgins is on our team next year. It just was kind of funny. Steve asks, thoughts on trading for Michael Mayer? Steve, we're going to talk about tight ends here in a little bit. Let's come back to that here in when we talk about tight ends here in just a few minutes as far as free agent tight ends, because that could be a free agent tight end in a weird way that you have to just give up a pick for potentially. And then the other big news from the week was the NFL PA report card came out. Bengals were really good in some and really bad in others. Let's start with the good. How about that? We'll start with the good.
Yeah.
Third, new locker room. Obviously, has turned out great. Third in the locker room, fourth in training staff, sixth in training room, ninth in the head coach. I know specifically Zach Taylor received really high grades on there for player communication of understanding and letting them speak if they have issues and so on, which I think is a really good sign.
Yeah.
Now, Bengals ranked 32nd out of, remind me, Mick, out of how many teams?
It ranked dead last out of all the teams in treatment
families,
of families, which
food,
yeah,
and their nutritionists. So let's start with the treatments of the families. That's not one that I necessarily want to be dead last in.
No, they've been dead last in this all three seasons that this report card has come out.
Paul Daner talked about this on the Growler. I guess it was this week, last week, or something. And he said the Bengals have actually been working on this, and they created a solution. Long story short, it was an awful idea, their solution, because apparently their issue is that what the main problem around this is that they don't have a spot after games to where players can meet with their families.
Okay.
So, but there's not much room to build something at Paycor, just because most of the room is being taken advantage of. So what they did apparently is they put a tent out in the parking lot.
Oh, geez.
And that did not necessarily go over the right way. So I don't know.
And I kind of get it. There's a finite amount of space. I mean, we all get it. But is there a way you could clear out like a meeting room or a conference room? Or hell, why not just make the players' meeting room the family meeting room? Like, you can't make that a multi-purpose room? Like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, it is, and I'm hoping that this can now be the next, like, locker room was last year, you know, that they built the locker room, and hopefully this summer, this can be the aspect, because I wouldn't imagine these families need much, you know, just an area to meet up.
Basic accommodations, like, it's not that hard to do, and it baffles me. This is a family-run organization. It is in a small, tight-knit community compared to the other markets in the NFL. I mean, it's just like you should be taking that approach with your family and extending that to your players. And as a player, like, if there's one thing I really want above, maybe not above all the other things, but there's one thing I really, really care about, it'd be the treatment of my family members, of my children and my wife, or whoever I wish to bring to the games. It's just, that's inexcusable to be graded an F minus.
Yeah,
not just an F minus.
Minus, yeah.
In treatment of families.
And then they were also dead last in the food, which now I feel bad for the poor Bengals chef, because this is now like 2 or 3 years in a row that they have been rated dead last in food. So what I'm just wondering is, like, you know what I really want? I really want me and you to go eat this food. And I want to know, like, is it really just awful? Or is it just like they have very high standards and this food is just like high level high school cafeteria food? Mm-hmm. Which, don't get me wrong, it should not be high level cafeteria food. But at the same time, apparently their biggest complaint is they only serve two meals a day instead of three.
Yeah, and that might be what's driving the grade down the most, right? Is that particular tidbit that they're not offering three meals a day. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just speaking from our own viewpoints in the concessions, and I don't know if those necessarily translate over. But the concessions at Paycor Stadium are pretty terrible. So, I mean, the food being bad for the players probably is on par. And it's particularly bad when you're looking over at Great American Ballpark, who have the best cuisine selection, I would think. Maybe not the best, but a fairly decent cuisine selection for the fans. I would assume they probably have something along similar lines for the players.
Yeah, 100%. And then the nutritionist also finished last. Now, I feel bad for the poor nutritionist now. Like, is that a, like, dang, like, F minus, like, poor nutritionist. And Alex writes in, says, the solution is a pizza party every Friday.
Alex, you made me chuckle there.
But the poor nutritionist gets an F minus too. But to me, that's a relatively easy solution too. Like, if your nutritionist sucks, maybe you should hire a new nutritionist, right?
I think Alex says the right. They need to just blood pizza boost, party. Blood boost workplace morale more than a pizza party. That's what every executive team probably says, honestly. Hilarious. It's just
hilarious. The PA report card, though, I'm very interested now to see how in 1 year, if any of these will be fixed. Because if the Bengals are treatment to families again next year as being awful, then really that's just showing a lack of care. That they're not at least trying something. Because apparently they tried something. It just was a fail.
A very poorly executed try. Now, you know, say these stadium plans end up coming through to fruition. You know, what we saw as the potential model for having their own separate building for all of the operations and things like that. Maybe that does get a little bit better. And I understand there is a finite amount of space in that stadium. But
what you could do then in that case is that the current front offices now become the player meeting and just make that look really nice. And then because the front offices are going to move across the street.
Yeah. Yeah, you could.
They got to make sure to build a sky bridge so Pat McAfee doesn't get upset, though, about the families having to walk across the street. Remember that.
I don't think that's going to happen. Hell, downtown used to have a shit ton of sky bridges, and they just got rid of them. I don't know why they did that, but...
You made us $10 million above expectations. Guess who's getting pizza? Every out of touch management team. I love that. Yeah, that is always a sign of something's about to go wrong when they bring out the pizza party. You know, it's like, oh, great. You did a great job.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's VANTA.com/simplify for $1,000 off.
Let's jump into some free agency here. Free agency begins. This is the wildest thing, Mike. Free agency begins a week from tomorrow. At least that's when they can tamper, which mm-hmm. I always find.
Which is pretty much the start of free agency.
Yeah, I always find it hilarious that it's like, well, the Bengals have agreed to a deal with blah, 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 blah. But technically, it's not official for 48 more hours.
Yeah.
But regardless, we're a week away. That's wild. That we're that close. So what we're going to do today is we're going to go all into the offense. Offensive free agents. And then next week, on next week's show, we're going to go into the defensive free agents, because I think next week's show will probably be more extensive, because I think it is more likely that you'll see more free agents thrown on the defensive side of the ball to try and fix what went wrong. Where you're going to see some on the offensive side, but probably not as many. I think probably.
And then also, I feel like the quality of the free agency class is probably not great on the defensive side. It's not great across the board. If it's probably tilted towards one side or the other, it's probably the defensive side of the football.
So what we're going to do, I think easiest to just go position by position for this. And I think we pretty much start slow and get more and more entertaining as it goes along, because the offensive line is where we're headed. But I think we start with quarterback, right? I mean, they clearly have to sign somebody, because what's happening is not working, right? I mean, like, Joe Burrow only passed for, like, what, 4,800 yards and how many touchdowns it is. Like,
Yeah, I would like for them to bring in a guy to compete with Joe Burrow for the starting job. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think he needs that extra motivation, you know?
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what would happen if, like, the Falcons cut Kirk Cousins, which I don't even think is possible, but it is... you know, and then all of a sudden the Bengals sign Kirk Cousins or something. It's just like really funny. Appreciate that, Steve. Appreciate it. We really appreciate you saying that. Okay. Obviously nothing happening in the running back position. Nothing happening. Or quarterback. Running back, though.
Yeah, I was about to say, I've got some things on the running back position.
Running back, sorry. Yeah, quarterback, there's nothing happening. Running back, it's interesting. You know, like Alex writes in here and says, the running backs are Aaron Jones, Najee Harris, and a whole bunch of who gives a rat's patoot. I haven't heard rat's patoot in a while. It's been a while since I've heard that one. I only wrote down really one, because to me, I really see this as a fourth or a fifth round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it going that route too. Now, you know, the thing is, there's not really a huge pressing need, right, for a starting running back or anything like that. I mean, I think Chase Brown played well in about every aspect that you could ask for from a running back. And I've got some numbers, 57th percentile in yards after contact, 49th in breakaway yardage rate, 90th percentile in receiving grade, which is huge, 86th percentile in pass block grade, and 61st percentile in elusive rating from PFF. It's a PFF specific stat. I mean, those numbers will get the job done, right? I mean, that is, there is no glaring weakness that Chase Brown has. Now, is he the best at the position? Probably not, but I think he might be a top 10 running back going into the season.
Especially fantasy.
First round pick. Yeah. The receiving grades are in the pass block grade really stand out to me. and how, especially of how much he's developed as a pass blocker, because we were worried about that. And we thought, you know, that's why they signed Zach Moss, you know, and then he unfortunately went down with the neck injury. And but we got to see a lot more Chase Brown afterwards. And I think the team is more better for it. If they're looking to add to the running back room in free agency, you're not looking for somebody that does what Chase Brown doesn't do well, because Chase Brown essentially, like I just said, does pretty much everything, at least to a solid level. But you are looking for somebody that's going to be pretty cheap in free agency if you decide to go that route, that can replace Chase Brown in a pinch and the offense still, you know, is working just fine, and the running back is not being a glaring weakness on the team.
I agree. You know, Alex writes in, says, where would you rank Chase Brown historically in terms of Bengals draft steals? I mean, I think you're still 1 year away from really calling it. Like, he had a really good year this year, but I think we need to see one more, because you see running backs, you see these 1 year phenoms of mm-hmm. running backs, and then year two, they kind of get figured out and they fall down. So if he has another big year this year, which I expect him to have, then I think you'd throw him up there. I don't know that he's quite Geno Atkins level of steal.
I don't know if he can really call a running back a draft.
And I don't disagree with that. Either.
I mean, hell, I think you and I don't know if you agree with this, but I feel like Chase Brown's closest like NFL comp pick, right? Or comparison is probably Austin Eckler. And Austin Eckler mm-hmm. was an undrafted free agent and did that stuff. So and played the way he did. So I don't know if you can really call a running back a draft steal. I'm just glad that they found a guy in the later rounds that can be, a good, solid starting running back on this team, which is something that we were clamoring for a couple of years ago.
What? No Mark Walton love from you?
No.
I just had to drop a Mark Walton reference on today's show. It was on the bingo card, right? I don't have a ton of names when it comes to running back, because like I said, I really think this is because for one, it's a pretty decent running back draft. And I think we're going to be able to say that a lot over these next couple of years, because I think this running back position is just going to keep churning through with all of these guys. You know, yeah. I saw Steve write in here and says, you know, Ashton Jeanty as the number 17 pick.
I don't think he falls that far.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all, but I don't see the Bengals taking a running back on day one or two.
No, I don't see them
unless,
taking one.
Unless somehow Ashton Jeanty's there on day two. Unless it's just one of these crazy falls or something, but that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, and I know that they talked to Jeanty, but they talked to a few day three running back picks as well, guys like Corey Kiner and Kyle Monongai out of Rutgers. I mean, that seems like the route they are headed. I do have a couple names here to maybe discuss.
Go for it.
In free agency, and I guess the one question of this free agency period is, do the Bengals bring back Khalil Herbert? So the Bengals traded for Khalil Herbert in the middle of 2024, traded a seventh round pick for him with the Chicago Bears. We didn't really get to see much of Khalil Herbert just with how good Chase Brown was playing. And the numbers weren't great in 2024. We're talking seventh percentile in yards after contact, didn't have any breakaway yardage, seventh percentile in receiving grade, 43rd in pass block grade, and the first percentile in elusiveness rating. But I think Khalil Herbert.
Let's just put it into first percentiles. That's not where you want to be. It's the opposite of where you want to be.
And we don't know what the issue was with Khalil Herbert. Is it the fact that he never really got going because he just didn't get enough snaps, enough carries, or whatever? But I'm still a believer in Khalil Herbert. I mean, we're only a season removed from him having a really good 2023 season, where all of those metrics, I mean, the lowest percentile he had was 45th in pass block grade. But if we're looking at 76th in yards after contact, 81st in breakaway yards, 67th in receiving grade, and 84th in elusiveness rating, which are really good numbers. Like those are the numbers that the Bengals traded for. Unfortunately, they didn't get it in 2024. But the solution is that Khalil Herbert's going to be pretty cheap this offseason. SpotRack's really currently cheap, valuing him at $2 million a season. Does he make a little bit more than that? Maybe. Maybe $2.5 million, maybe $3 million. I still think there is a lot to like about Khalil Herbert.
To me, he's the guy that comes in and competes with Travion Williams for running back three.
Well, Travion Williams is also a free agent.
Yeah, and I guarantee he'll be a guy that gets the league minimum to come back and compete in training camp, just because I can't imagine he has much of a market.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know, I think Darren Simmons is a big Travion Williams guy, because as running back three, you want somebody who probably has some special teams.
Yeah. And we've seen him have some good kick returns.
Yeah. You know me. That's something I want. Yeah. I love me somebody who can do some kickoff returns. What about Javonte Williams? I know you're not a huge Javonte Williams guy. The biggest thing that stands out with him.
Expensive too. I mean, what is really valued at? Like $5 million.
So he averaged 3.7 yards per carry. But the biggest thing with him is, you know, you mentioned Khalil Herbert not getting a ton of snaps. Neither did Javonte Williams. His season high in snaps was 19. You know, I don't think he had any against the Bengals when they played, you know, week 17. But the biggest thing that stands out about Javonte Williams is that he's regressed every single year that he's been in the NFL when it comes to PFF grades.
Yeah.
Now, it's not been a massive regression, but he's kind of just slowly gone down since he came in. But that's just a name that I was looking at that I was like, eh. But again, I don't see them doing it. What about Steve's suggestion here of Najee Harris?
That's not happening. Sorry, Steve. I don't think that's happening. I think he's too expensive. We already have an RB1 on the team. Another name that I was interested in, Elijah Mitchell, running back from the San Francisco 49ers. He was the starting running back for the Niners in 2021, but saw his role diminished as Christian McCaffrey came to town, as would happen with probably any other running back, not named Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley in this league. But yeah, I mean, we saw some really good years out of Elijah Mitchell when he was playing. He sat out all of 2024 with a hamstring injury, so we didn't really get to see him this past season. But graded pretty well in 2022, 50th percentile in yards after contact, 35th in breakaway yards. Those numbers aren't great, but we're talking 99th percentile in receiving grade, 76th in pass block grade, 33rd percentile in elusive rating. He doesn't currently have a market value on SpotRack, which tells me he's going to be a dirt cheap player to sign in this free agency class. And this is a guy I think that they could bring in. And if Chase Brown does go down, you know, God forbid, in the middle of the season, he has a season ending injury. This is a guy I think they could thrust into action to be that starter.
No, that would be a really good name. I mean, he was really good when he came out. He's a Louisiana guy, right?
Yeah, Louisiana. He's a raging Cajun.
Yep. Yeah, they're no longer Louisiana Lafayette. They're just Louisiana, which kind of bugs me because I always will call them Louisiana Lafayette. But that's an argument for another day. You got any more running backs, or you want to jump into some wide receivers?
No, we'll go into wide receivers.
I think we got to start when we talk about wide receivers and with the elephant in the room, because I think this elephant in the room changes everything when it comes to free agency and how aggressive the Bengals will be when they get into it. And that's the T. Higgins. You know, now the rumors came out week before last, where James Rapine from Sports Illustrated was reporting that the Bengals will franchise tag T. Higgins. And I know how you feel about it, Mick. You know how I feel about it. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I think it is a smart move for the Bengals when it comes to building a winning football team in 2025, whatever year it is. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the best for morale or so on, but my biggest thing is you're putting this tag on him because, well, you don't want him to leave. Now, that's probably your own fault for it, but I know Paul Dana was talking on his podcast that the number one ranked free agent in PFF has only been not returned to the team that he was on once in like the last 6 or 7 years. And that was Davante Adams. And he was tagged in trade. But the T. Higgins thing is a huge aspect to discuss when it comes into free agency, because if they don't tag him and he walks out the door and he signs with the Commanders, just for an example, then the need at wide receiver has shot up the charts.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better myself. We're going to find out by Tuesday if he does indeed get tagged. You know, that is the franchise tag deadline is on March 4th. Right now, I think the franchise tag for a wide receiver is around $26 million. And then if he doesn't get tagged, I think T. Higgins is making about $30 million because of how slim the market is at the X position wide receiver in this free agency class. I've already voiced my opinion on the franchise tag. I think, one, I'm not a big fan of it in general, just because I think it really puts the players at a disadvantage, especially if they went down with a career-altering injury during the franchise tag season. But I'm very much against tagging a player 2 years in a row. But this wide receiver class is slim pickings. There's really nobody. I mean, I know I talked Josh Palmer a couple weeks ago or a month ago, but even now, just looking deeper in the numbers, I don't know if I'd even feel comfortable with that, right? So
there's really nothing.
There really isn't anything at the X wide receiver position, which is what T essentially plays. I mean, T had his best year in 2024 as well. You know, 95th percentile in receiving grade, 88th in drop rate. Wasn't great yards after catch, 23rd percentile in that mark. And then contested catch rate, 43rd percentile, but was 12th in contested catch opportunities. And that was with him missing five games this season. 83rd percentile in passer rating while targeted. I mean, this was a great season from T. Higgins. And if you can make a deal work, go for it. But here's the problem with that is that I think the bigger want from this fan base, the bigger need for this team is extending Ja'Marr Chase this offseason. And how much money do the Bengals have in the bank to offer guaranteed money to both T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase? We really don't know the answer to that question, but just given what the value of this of the Brown family is, I can't imagine it's they're sitting on a whole lot of cash. But yeah,
again, they're not poor. Like we got to remember like how much they're pulling in a lot of money. Like it's
well, there's a difference between pulling in a lot of money and having liquid assets available, especially when you have what $200 million guaranteed going to Joe Burrow.
And that's where you're probably do you do some restructuring and so on.
Well, I mean, Joe's not going to give up guaranteed money. That's another thing. I doubt he gives up guaranteed money. I don't know how he's going to restructure the deals to make T and Ja'Marr Chase both on the team long term. But yeah, I mean, there's really slim pickings in the free agency class, and I don't think the wide receiver draft class is really that strong this season. This year,
What I like to look at here is that we've seen the Joe Burrow reclamation projects. You know, it's like it was always the thing with Nick Saban where fired coaches would go, they do like their 2 years under Nick Saban, and then they come out and they get hired again and have success, you know, like Lane Kiffin and so on. You'd see all of these guys. That would be like their process to get back into the game. I think you're going to start seeing these, you know, we've seen it a lot at the tight end position of tight ends come through and then they go get paid. You know, Mike Gesicki might be a guy this year. If he doesn't go to the Bengals, he's going to get paid somewhere. You know, we saw it with CJ Uzama. We saw it with Hayden Hurst. Irv Smith technically got paid. He did technically go somewhere else and make money. Now, that probably wasn't any benefit of Joe Burrow, but still, we've not seen it from the wide receiver. But part of that is because there really haven't been any opportunities for the Bengals
There hasn't been a need at the wide receiver position. I mean, I guess there was a slight need for it this past offseason where they thought that they had the solution with Jermaine Burton, but we don't know if that guy is going to be on the team in 2025. I mean, really, ever since Ja'Marr Chase has been drafted, they haven't had a huge need potentially at the wide receiver position until this offseason.
I'm going to drop a name here, and I already know you're probably going to start cursing at the name.
You're going to say Terrace Marshall Jr.?
No, I'm not. No, okay. No. Alex Schubert's watching, so I can't do that because he would start cursing at me if I would drop in Terrace Marshall Jr. Although I did, he did pop up on the list, and I was like, "How bad has he been?" And I was like, "He had
one just, fairly decent season though in 2023, 2022, one of the 2 years where he's just averaging like 18 yards a reception.
Is the Raiders? Is that where he ended up? I think that's
yeah. He's a free agent this offseason though.
He is. I did see it because I was reading into that a little bit earlier today. But how about we pull a guy down from the team up north in Elijah Moore? And now here's at least why I was reading into it. And I'm like, okay, interesting. For one, he's not going to cost a ton of money, and he might take a little bit less for a one-year prove-it deal. But he doesn't really drop, you know, 6.2 drop percentage. That's not bad. You know, he at least has decent hands. He only had four drops all season of last year. There it is. Alex Schubert, my Terrace Marshall was mentioned. Senses are tingling. But the thing with Elijah Moore that the Bengals have liked a lot over these last couple of years is the inside-out versatility. Somebody who can line up in the slot, but also go outside when needed. We saw them do that a lot with Ja'Marr Chase. Elijah Moore did that with the Browns. And I mean, here's my biggest thing with Elijah Moore. We can say what he is about a wide receiver. And in his stats, he's been largely, what's the word? Meh?
I mean, he hasn't been very good.
But, other than but my follow-up is he's never had a quarterback.
Yeah, he's been in some very dull offenses. Now,
yes,
you see,
and that's what I'm saying.
We could say he's never had a good quarterback, but I mean, he did have
Mike White.
He had the career resurgence of Joe Flacco in 2023, okay, where he just went off with the Browns. Okay. But yeah, I mean, that's a name to definitely throw out there.
Somebody that's good, a 1 year cheap deal of him, what the Bengals have been doing at the tight end position. Of you're just throwing a name out there and you're going to say, you know what, you can come here, you play, maybe take a little bit less money, but you get to play with a real quarterback with real wide receivers, and then next year go get paid, showing that you can do it. Or maybe it's an Irv Smith, and then you say, oh, well, crap.
Yeah, and I definitely see where your point is there. Now, is this assuming that they re-signed T, or is this as a T replacement?
Because this is not as a T replacement. No.
Okay, I was going to say, because this guy is not an X receiver.
No,
like
he's inside out
versatile.
Yeah.
And we're going to need an X receiver replacement if we do not bring T in.
And that's the
problem is there's no X receiver replacements in this free agency class, to be frank. But yeah, I mean, that's just another, that's one aspect of the wide receiver position. But there is an aspect, like you said, with the slot receiver position as well. The Bengals' two slot receivers this year were Andre Yosivash and Mike Gesicki.
Ja'Marr Chase.
Ja'Marr Chase also saw a huge increase in slot in the slot this year, which I think was a great move by Dan Pitcher and Zach Taylor to get him more involved in that, because I think that the slot is really where Ja'Marr Chase could just be just insanely good. Like it's hard to cover him on the outside. I imagine it's way harder to cover him in the slot. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at potentially receiving or replacing the slot receiver position. Andre Yosivash did not have a great year in 2024. We saw him on the field a lot and didn't see the production to really match it. We talked about how bad first percentile is. Andre Yosivash is first percentile in receiving grade and yards after catch, which is something that Bengals receivers usually like to do, is, you know, have good grading and have good yardage after the catch. That's what Ja'Marr Chase has literally been his entire career. 19th percentile in drop rate. We know Joe Burrow doesn't like that. And frankly, nobody likes that.
I've dropped the line a lot with Andre Yosivash. And I love Yoshi. Like, he is a good wide receiver four. You know, he is your wide receiver four that can come in there, give you a couple of snaps a game. And if he's playing, if he's filling in for somebody for two or three games, that's okay. You know, that's okay. But Andre Yosivash is what people thought Trent Irwin was. Like, he's fine. He's not great. Now, maybe he takes a step forward this year. He's insanely athletic, but there's been some questions. Steve says Cooper Kupp and a second for T. Higgins. I don't think the Rams would accept that. Well, I guess, I don't see that happening.
I don't know. I it's really hard for me to predict trades in this league, what the market is.
Well, I mean, you could just always trade like five or six picks for Justin Herbert for in the future, right?
Oh, geez.
Interesting tidbit I just found. Elijah Moore caught touchdowns from Joe Flacco on two different teams. I don't know. And Elijah Moore was just, I was looking for like a potential Joe Burrow reclamation project.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that you're going to see that from the tight end position this year. So it's like, well, maybe wide receiver is that. And Elijah Moore was a guy that kind of popped out of being, okay, that one at least would make somewhat sense of being not very expensive and would kind of fit if they re-signed T. Higgins.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we got another question to ask on, you know, and I'm going to throw him in the wide receiver position because he's essentially your wide receiver. He was your wide receiver three, and he played out in the slot most of his year in 2024. But Mike Gesicki, do they bring him back? Do they break the mold of letting these guys sign with other teams for big money, you know, after being tight end reclamation projects? And that was necessarily what Mike Gesicki was in 2024. You know, graded really well in receiving grade, drop rate, contested catch rate, passer rating when targeted. Not great in yards after catch, but still serviceable. His current market value, I think, is around $8 million per season. He is 30 years old. We don't know when the cliff is going to happen with Mike Gesicki, but I think that him and Joe Burrow really showed a strong connection in 2024. And when you have that, like, it's really hard to let it go. So I really think that if you're not bringing T. Higgins back long term, or if you're going
to, oh, you have to bring back Mike Gesicki, then
you need to bring back Mike Gesicki. I still think they should bring him back regardless.
Agreed.
You do 2 years, 60 million, 3 years, 24, with 2 years of that guaranteed. I think that would be a great contract for him.
I was reading PFF earlier. PFF has him projected 2 for 12 with $6.25 million guaranteed. If that's the deal, I'm
sign me up. Sign me up for that deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because that gives you an out after 1 year in the case that it does just fall off the wagon. But take me up. Yep. 100%. I would sign that deal. And I'd be fine with like 2 for 14. You know, or somewhere in that realm for a Mike Gesicki. But you heard Joe Burrow talk, and his mind kind of changed at the Super Bowl, where, you know, he says, we need to re-sign T. Higgins. We need to extend Jamar Chase. We need to keep Trey Hendrickson. But the Mike Gesicki thing ended up, like, he was vouching for him as well, which is not nothing. There's no opinion that matters.
If you're in the mind of Joe Burrow, you're probably
sick of having a new tight end every damn year.
Well, he probably is, but he's also probably thinking, I mean, this is the best year I've ever had in this league. It was this past season in 2024. I want to keep those guys around as long as I can if they're going to continue to play at this level. So, yeah, I mean, that's that. I think that's going to be essential, is bringing back Gesicki. Another slot target I have, and this would maybe be the Andre Yoshibosh replacement, in 2025, Olamide Zaccheaus out of the Washington Commanders. I think he had his best statistical season in 2024. Now, the numbers aren't, you know, jaw-dropping, but 52 of 72 targets were caught, 551 yards, 3 touchdowns in 2024, 85th percentile in yards after contact. That's something I really liked when I was looking up his profile. 55th percentile in contested catch rate, 70th percentile in passer rating when targeted. And his contract value, which is the best selling point for him, it's only about $2 million average value per year. I would assume it would only be a one-year deal. But yeah, that's just a guy I'd be stoked to see on this in this offense.
Can I just drop another Washington Commanders wide receiver? Like, can we
Deami Brown?
No, can we just take Noah Brown? Just so he doesn't, like, sticky, because he can't hurt us if he's with us, even though
he did much against the Commanders. 2024, no,
he did. Yeah. He didn't. I just always like that. Alex asks, what about Darius Slayton?
I'm not a big fan of Darius Slayton.
You've kind of changed your tune on him.
Yeah, well, it's like we watched him play really well against us, but if you just look at the grading throughout his career, it's been pretty mid. I mean, along the lines of like an Elijah Moore, I'm not looking for mid wide receivers, to throw money at.
And then the question is Darius Slayton in the same realm of Elijah Moore of, you know, he's never played with a Joe Burrow, you know?
Yes.
But I would argue that he's played, Daniel Jones is probably better than what Elijah Moore has played with, other than the little bit of Joe Flacco he played.
Yeah.
Noah Brown caught the Jaden Daniels Hail Mary. I think that is accurate from Alex Schubert. I honestly, when I went into tight ends, Mike Gesicki was the only one that I named. But I think where we can go is I think Steve asked earlier, is the Michael Mayer thing. we can at least discuss this a little bit. You know, the Raiders, not surprisingly, are thinking of shopping Michael Mayer, because in case you hadn't realized, they have a tight end who's pretty, he's pretty good.
He's all right.
Listen, Brock Bowers, who? So, I mean, Michael Mayer doesn't really have a fit on that team whatsoever. He's a Cincinnati guy. You know, he went to Covington Catholic High School.
Boo.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm not going to disagree with that. But let's say fifth round pick. You saying yes?
I would say yes for a fifth round pick. I mean, if your fifth round pick is essentially 2 years of Michael Mayer, like I think that would be serviceable. And they have a need at the inline tight end position this year,
especially with no Eric Hall.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, Eric Hall suffering the setback on his ACL injury. Your current starting inline tight ends, Drew Sample really just hasn't graded well throughout his entire career. The Bengals could be looking for an upgrade. This past season, he caught 20 of 22 passes, 109 yards and a touchdown, 16th percentile in receiving grade, 41st in yards after catch, 37th in contested catch rate, 61st in passer rating, which really is just a Joe Burrow stat because he's really good. 22nd in run block grade, which was really surprising when just looking at the numbers here, because your immediate thought on Drew Sample is that this guy is a blocking tight end, and he doesn't even do that well. So you need to, I think you need to upgrade with somebody. Now, Michael Mayer is definitely a possibility there. There's not a lot of free agent tight ends right now. I noted one, and that was Hunter Long, the tight end from the Los Angeles Rams, who has had very limited play. Only had 8 receptions for 73 yards in 2024, but the grading was really good for him. Receiving grade was top half of the league. His run block grade was in the 96th percentile. He graded really well in run blocking. And his current value right now is about $2 million a season. So, I mean, he's cheap.
You've got some tight ends in this draft class as well that we'll talk about more in the coming weeks once we know what the Bengals tight end situation is. But, I mean, Michael Mayer, I think, would make the fans happy. Not that that's what the moves that should be made. It would probably make him happy. But, I mean, if you could do it for a fifth and even a sixth, you know, or something in that realm, then I think you do jump all over it. Do you have any other tight ends? You want to jump into the meat and potatoes, really, of this entire conversation, and that's the offensive line.
Yeah, let's go to the offensive line.
Let's start at offensive tackle. There's really not a lot here. I have one name to bring you for an offensive tackle, and just because I'm finding my theme from cheap reclamation projects, and it wasn't on purpose, but I guess cheap reclamation projects from the Cleveland Browns. Jedrick Wills, and here's why. For one, he's not going to cost a lot of money. And there's probably nobody that knows him better than Scott Peters, you know, the new Bengals offensive line coach. Now, the question is Scott Peters might say, absolutely not. No chance. Like, I do not want Jedrick Wills whatsoever. Or maybe he says, yes, there's something more in there that I can do something to work with. Another factor for Jedrick Wills, though, is you know where he's from?
No.
Lexington, Kentucky. He's from Lexington, so just down the road. Does that have a factor of potentially playing closer to home? Now, I know.
Where did he go to high school? Did he go to Lafayette?
He did. He went to Lafayette. Okay. So, yeah, that's something of a factor. Now, he hasn't graded great throughout his career, and it's progressively gotten worse throughout it. Now, he's dealt with some injuries as well. And then how much of last year being not so great is the fact that he lost maybe the best offensive line coach of all time in Bill Callahan. And an offensive line coach is something that is super, super important. But for a cheap guy to bring in there in the realm of he would be your Deontay Smith, you know, of your offensive tackle 4, and maybe a change of scenery and Scott Peters can work some magic and he turns out to be the first round pick that he was thought to be.
Yeah. I agree that I mean, the Bengals have they have a need for a backup tackle in this league. On this roster, they only currently have 3 tackles on the roster in Orlando Brown Jr., Amarius Mims, and Devin Cochran, who is really I mean, woo! He's really a practice squad body. And I guess it's Jackson Kirkland. Maybe I don't even know if I saw Jackson Kirkland on the team as well.
There's not much there.
There's not much there. You got to look at bringing somebody back. Now, Cody Ford's going to be mentioned quite a bit. But I know we both know that the Bengals prefer to have him in the interior as an interior offensive lineman, as a backup in that position. I mean, the only reason he was thrusted into tackle is just with this past season was just with the insane amount of injuries that the team sustained. But yeah, I mean, so I'm not looking for a reclamation project, but I'm looking for potentially a Trent Brown type of situation to come in here for cheap. But you still have good experience, really good production on the field. And I have two players here. Both are definitely on the older side, entering in their to their 11th seasons. But the first one that I thought of was Morgan Moses, the offensive tackle, most recently with the Jets, but he's played with the Commanders and with the Ravens. Didn't grade great last year, but it wasn't terrible. Definitely serviceable, but the 2023 numbers are really good. 76th percentile in pass block grade, 84th in true pass sets, 64th percentile in pass block efficiency, 90th percentile in run block grade, is 34, 35, doesn't command a lot of money. Current market value is $2 million. So I think that's one option. Another one is Cornelius Lucas, offensive tackle from the Commanders. Had his one of his best seasons to date in 2024. 73rd percentile in pass block grade, 90th in true pass sets, 79th in pass block efficiency, 47th in run block grade, currently valued at $2.7 million per year. But I think the Bengals need a good insurance policy at the tackle position, just given the bad luck that you've had there, that they had there this past season. You want a good insurance policy. And that may even include just bringing Trent Brown back, because that dude's probably going to be dirt cheap this offseason. And he was dirt cheap this past offseason. I think what we signed him for $3 million.
Yeah, something like that, three or four.
$3 or $4 million. Tore his ACL. Like, what, he's going to be valued at $1.5 million. Like, that's another potential insurance policy as well, I think.
Yeah, you need depth. You need depth. You need depth on that offensive line, because Devin Cochran does not need to be starting meaningful snaps with Joe Burrow as your quarterback.
Yeah.
There's just no other way to put it. How about we shift inside to, I think, if we had to bet money on the offense, if you were putting a favorite of the most likely position that the Bengals make a signing early in free agency, I think offensive guard is probably the favorite.
Yes.
And I don't think it's relatively close. Like, I don't even know what would be second, not counting an extension from one of their current guys. Like, I legitimately don't even know what would be second, because offensive guard is so far ahead. I think we start, though, with at the top and just explain why it's not going to happen. Trey Smith. And here's, for one, it wasn't going to happen regardless, because the Bengals aren't going to pay him that much money. But now it's really not going to happen, because the Chiefs have put the non-exclusive tag on him, which, if you don't know what that is that means he's allowed to negotiate with other teams and sign an offer sheet with and the Chiefs have a chance to match that. If they choose not to, they're entitled to receive draft compensation equivalent to two first-round picks from the signing team. So I'm going to tell you this right now, Mick. The Bengals are not giving up two first-round picks for Trey Smith.
No team should give up that for a guard in general, right?
Like, very few players in the NFL that are worth that.
Yeah, I don't give a shit if it's Zach Martin, right? Like, Trey Smith's not worth that by any means. So he's not a realistic guy here.
No.
But the good news is there's a couple of guys that I think you and I both like here to potentially replace Alex Kappa and Cordell Volson. Now, the guard play we had this past season has been pretty bad. It was probably one of the worst I've seen from a Bengals team, probably dating back to the Cedric Oboehe offensive line years. Now, I know he didn't play guard, but that was pretty much the era where the offensive line was really, really, really bad. Bobby Hart. So we're talking 2017, 2018 offensive lines here. But yeah, Alex Kappa, I mean, started out really strong with his team, was a really reliable guy, and then just for some reason fell off a cliff in 2024. Won the triple crown of pressure, sacks, QB hits.
He was awesome.
Was not good.
He was awful.
Cordell Volson was about just as bad, but at least Cordell Volson graded really, you know, pretty decent in run blocking. So maybe that's something Scott Peters is like, man, maybe I can work with this. But yeah, I think that there's some good names out there. Yeah, I think my favorite, and I believe he might be your favorite in this free agent class, is Tevin Jenkins, the guard out of the Chicago Bears, currently valued at $10.3 million a year. So he's not dirt cheap, but the Bengals need to spend money at this guard position, and you're about to get $8 million back in cap from cutting Alex Kappa, which I think is something that is probably going to happen. But Tevin Jenkins was a former second-round pick. His issue has always been his durability, though. He's only played in 45 out of potential 68 games throughout his career. So what, that's about two-thirds, a little over two-thirds of your games, of his games. But yeah, I mean, when he's been on the field, he's played really well. 89th percentile in pass block graded 2024, 76 in true pass sets, 76th percentile in pass block efficiency, 83rd percentile in run block grade.
To me, the biggest thing that stands out about Tevin Jenkins, too, is he was the lone guy on that offensive line. Like, that was a bad offensive line.
It wasn't good.
And he looked good with a bunch of, as you know, the line from the Growler always was, is with a bunch of donkeys around him, you know, like nobody that's very good around him. So that has to mean something for Tevin Jenkins. So yeah, he was absolutely on my list. What about a reunion?
Who's that?
With the old man Zeitler. Kevin Zeitler, outstanding season last year with a really good offensive line with the Detroit Lions, but it's 35 years old. That's also the Bengals don't also really do at all.
We've talked about Kevin Zeitler as a potential free agent to come back for a reunion.
Since he left.
Since he left. Or maybe at least since like Cleveland was looking to move on from him, right?
But I mean, other than since Amarius Mims, though, Amarius Mims was the first pretty much good draft pick on the offensive line since Kevin Zeitler. I mean, they really hadn't had anybody that was really great on the offensive line since him. So maybe you try to run that back and bring him here. I mean, he'd be a 1-year deal. I think you could do worse. You could probably do worse than him, but Father Time comes from us all. And it is very concerning that you sink some money into him and Father Time comes and he turns into Alex Kappa this year.
Yep. And there's always a chance that he does that. You know, I didn't have Kevin Zeitler on my list just for the sheer fact that we talk about him coming back. Everybody talks about him coming back. They've done it for the past 5 years or so, and that's never happened. Another name that I like.
Just go ahead and make a reminder to talk about it this time next year?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
We'll do unless he retires. Another name that I would be okay with would be Aaron Banks, the guard from the 49ers. Yep, former second-round pick out of Notre Dame, currently valued at $9.7 million, average annual value. Best-graded season was in 2024, but it wasn't, you know, off the charts good. I mean, it was solid, especially compared to his prior seasons. 38th percentile in pass block grade, 44th in true pass sets. It's not great. But not terrible. Definitely not as bad as Volson and Kappa have been. 54th in pass block efficiency, 71st percentile in run block grade, which I liked. But that's just another name that I had out there.
Charlie Goldsmith, you know, has been doing some work with Paul Daner on the Growler, and they did an episode a couple of weeks ago, which I highly recommend, where they literally just talked about guard play for like 35 minutes. And it was actually, I found it very entertaining. Watching some film, breaking down, and in Charlie's pick, I'm not huge on, but his explanation at least made somewhat of sense. I don't know if you listened to the episode or not, but he goes to the Baltimore Ravens,
Patrick McCarry,
and his now if you want to look at just PFF grades, he rated 51st out of 77 guards last year That's not great. Now, the one thing that he does offer, like a Cody Ford, he's very versatile.
He is
on the offensive
versatile. Lane. Yeah.
And how much does that play into the Bengals potentially wanting him? But then also, how much does that play into teams paying him probably more than he's actually worth?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could play into it. And although he didn't grade very well this past season, I mean, he's generally graded pretty well at his entire career leading up to last year. You know, we're looking at a 71 team grade in 2023, 73 in 2022. I mean, this was really his first season where he started every game in 2024. But if you just look, this guy was moving around all throughout the offensive line. He started initially at right tackle and was playing really well at that. And then just because of injuries that, excuse me, I believe they transitioned him to left guard. And how much of that, I mean, you're of switching around positions. Does that kind of hamper your productivity? I imagine that would hurt it quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, when Charlie Goldsmith was saying, I was like, and then when he was explaining his reasoning, I was like, okay, I mean, I could be talked into that of being somebody that the Bengals could potentially jump into. One of the other names that I did when we did our mock off season of being a guy that, I mean, it's a little bit of a risk, but has been really consistent when he's plays, and that's Will Hernandez. Now, the risk with Will Hernandez is that he's coming off of an ACL injury. But the pro to coming off of an ACL injury is that you're probably not going to make as much money as you would have if you weren't coming off of the ACL injury. But, you know, PFF projects him 2 years for $4.75 million a year. That's relatively cheap, you know, as far as even if it doesn't work out that you're okay. But he graded really well before he got hurt for the Cardinals this year. And he got hurt in week 4, 5, 6, somewhere in that realm where he tore his ACL. But prior to that point, he was having a really good season. And he's always been just a pretty solid guard in the NFL.
Yeah. And he would be your, he primarily plays right guard. He would be your Alex Kappa replacement. Yeah, I mean, he's a name that I like as well. He is getting a little bit older. He's 29 right now. Probably he'll be turning 30 right around the time the 2025 season starts. But if you're only doing in 2 years, $4.5 million a year, I don't think that's really a high risk at all.
No, not at all, especially if that is what he'll go with. What do you think about Will Freeze?
I mean, I'm not sold on him.
He is pretty much what, at least, you know, PFF and so on are saying is going to be the crown jewel of the guard class. Because, especially now with no Trey Smith, I mean, technically Trey Smith is going to be a free agent, but really he's not. Like, nobody's going to give up 2 first-round picks for Trey Smith. 2024, when you look at it, was far and away his best season. But, and this is a huge but, he fractured his tibia in week 5. So really, that was 4 weeks that he was performing at an extremely high level. But the rest of his career, he's been fine. But I feel like he's, am I crazy in saying that the projections that I've been seeing of him making $14 million a year is a little crazy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how he's making more than Tevin Jenkins is projected.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
That's
especially coming off of a fractured tibia.
Yeah. Coming off of a fractured tibia, and the best you have to go off of in terms of his production is a 5-game sample size.
And not even that, it was like 4.5, you know, because he got hurt. Like, it's even less. Like,
oh yeah, he logged in 45 snaps against the Jaguars, so that's probably closer to 5 than 4.5. But yeah, that's, I'm not, if he's going to be making that much money, let some other team sign him, because I'm not for that.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. I mean, it would be a pretty decent, if you get four weeks, then it's probably worth that much money because you're getting a really, really good guard. But are you really putting a $14 million lottery ticket in?
No.
Bengals have cap room. They don't have that much cap room.
Now, this isn't to necessarily crap on Will Freeze either, because I mean, this dude was a 7th-round draft pick and has been able to really like get, you know, to crack into the starting lineup for the Colts and ended up playing at a high level eventually. But yeah, I just, like you said, that's a steep price for a small sample size of elite play from them.
You got any more guards?
No.
Yeah, I didn't put any centers on there.
I didn't list any centers. I mean, we could have listed centers and, you know, advised that Ted Karras would have transitioned to left or right guard, but no.
But there's not a lot out there as far as centers right now, and most of them are probably going to be making more money than the Bengals want to play. I know the Falcons center, I was looking, PFF is pretty high on him, but it's going to be making more money than the Bengals are probably going to pay. We'll do this again next week as well when we go into the defensive free agents, but let's both go in here and let's make one prediction for a Bengals offensive free agent signing.
Tevin Jenkins, locking it in.
I'm going to go Will Hernandez.
Okay.
I hope you're right. And the Patrick McCurry one is one that's interesting as well. My assumption is that Tevin Jenkins is going to be one of those guys that gets paid a little bit more than the Bengals are wanting to pay. You know how they love to do that. They're going to have their value on Tevin Jenkins. And my assumption is that he'll end up going somewhere that, like, and I'm using the Panthers, not because the Panthers have guards. They spent money on guards, but somewhere like that of a not very good situation, but just because they paid him $2 million more than the Bengals are willing to go. And we're going to forget Tevin Jenkins exists in 2 years kind of thing. But so that's my prediction is Will Hernandez, you're going Tevin Jenkins. And I think we'd both be pretty happy if either one of those happens.
Yeah. I'd be okay with those.
How soon into free agency do we get a guard?
First day.
So you think Monday?
Yeah.
I agree. Now, do we get it as quick as remember the Alex Kappa and Ted Karras was literally like, I think the Ted, one of the two was literally 30, like the clock ticked noon and immediately like Adam Schefter had the tweet ready.
Well, yeah. It's so like, let's say at noon at 12:01, you know, because the Bengals were always rumored to sign Ryan Jensen that offseason in 2022. Yes. So like 12:01, Ryan Jensen signed with the Bucs, and 12:10, Alex Kappa came to the Bengals. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be that quick. We'll say by 1:30, 2 o'clock.
Oh, but relatively quick. Okay.
I think it'll be pretty early.
I hope you're right. Next week, we're going to go all the way into the defense. Because in case you didn't know, the defense has some holes on it. Just like one, right? I think that's it. I think it's just one hole that they need to fix. We'll go into the defensive line. We'll go into linebackers. We'll go into corner. We'll go into safeties. Because there's probably holes at all of those levels. And theoretically, you could make a case that the Bengals make a signing at each of those positions. And for some of them, multiple of them. You know, especially when it comes to the defensive line. And so on. So that'll be next week's show, next Sunday. Remember, we're going to be on Sundays until about middle of April, when we'll shift back into Wednesdays. And maybe even during April, we might even do a couple of shows a week to catch back up when it comes to draft. I know that we did that last year, where we ended up doing like Sunday, Wednesday leading up to the draft. So I don't know if we'll end up doing that or not. We'll have to see how it goes on. Steve says goodbye, Pratt and Stone. I think you're probably right. But that'll be next week's show. It will be. Any parting thoughts or anything that we didn't get to on your extensive list?
No, we pretty much covered everything. Enjoy the rest, or enjoy your week, viewers. And I'm going to go in and do some taxes tomorrow. So yay.
And then to end us up for this week, do we get a Go Freedom from you?
No.
Well, inside joke, but let freedom ring. That's what they say. Let freedom ring. We'll see you next week on next week's edition of the show. Hooday, Mick.
Hooday. Thanks for watching.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.